Hello and welcome to Broker's Playbook. Today we have the esteemed Jeremy Amiot with Sotheby's International Realty out of Edmonton, Alberta. Jeremy is an Amazon number one best-selling author. He's written a book on self-assurance, confidence, and courage. It's our pleasure to have him today with my host, Simeon Papalias. Myself, I'm Laura Martin, and we are here to talk shop with a really, really courageous and exceptionally talented broker, Jeremy. Welcome aboard.
Thanks. You're too kind.
And Jeremy, I think not a lot of real estate brokers out there have written books. I think that sort of puts you in the headier type of agent. You really get some that are gunslinging, you know, fly by the seat of their pants, doing deals, running their mouth. You seem a little bit more thoughtful.
Yeah, I'm actually not much of a talker. Believe it or not, there's actually grew up very introverted, and you know, my personality's certainly kind of come out and flourished over time. But yeah, writing the book is, there's a reason that not a lot of people have done it. It's a long journey, and it's something like, for me, I've always felt that I didn't want my identity as a human to just be a realtor that sells a lot of houses. And so for as fulfilling as that can be, it's like, it's not the only thing. And I think that we have different aspects of our lives. For me, I always have to find some fulfillment. And while a lot of that can come from my business and my career, some of it has to come from those things that you're not doing necessarily for money. And the book was a pull. It felt like something that I had to do. And because I grew up with very low self-confidence and had a little bit of a different childhood honestly believed that I would amount to not much. And here I am, and I think is a great life. And I wanted to share it in written word, one, because I think that I articulate myself better as, you know, by writing than I do by speaking. Because you have the time to edit when you write and make sure that it's, you know, your words are very intentional. And two, because my kids, when I decided to write the book, they're a little bit older now, but they're still a little bit too young for the message, was that what if I died before they were old enough to receive that message? Because I sure, you know, I didn't consider myself a great parent when they were 2, 3, 4 years old. But I know what I can share with them when they're older and ready to receive the message, when they're the teenager that I was. And so just in case I'm not there, they've got something that I can leave behind, or I've got something I can leave behind for them. So
yeah. That's pretty incredible, my man. And welcome to the show. For those who are just tuning in for the first time to Broker's Playbook, my name is Simeon Papalias. And you just heard from Jeremy Amiot, an award-winning broker out of Edmonton at Sotheby's. Thank you for the amazing introduction, Miss Laura Martin. I appreciate that. What we just heard, Jeremy, kind of really resonates well with me, but I can assure you with a lot of people, only because I know Laura and a lot about her personality and her past. I can assure you that you have two people in this very room that can resonate with an interesting backstory. And many others, especially for people who are in business for self. A lot of people who are in business for self don't come from the cushiest backgrounds, meaning they've always had to figure stuff on their own from a young age. And when you continue down that path through your childhood and your teenage years, typically you're not going to be the best fit for a defined role in a corporation. You're naturally a problem solver, a salesman, meaning not selling something, but always selling your case and having to find a way to get what you need put across. I find it interesting. I can't wait to read your book. I want to thank you so very much for the copy that you sent my office. I'm looking forward in the read, and I'm hoping that I will be able to get the PDF digital copy of your book onto the site at the same time as this episode airs. Everybody can pretty much benefit from getting some of your wisdom and insight. I want I want to dive a little bit into the message of you as a broker. Tell me a little bit about your practice. You're an inspiration to many, and you were introduced to Broker's Playbook by a common friend and a friend of Broker's Playbook, Ms. Storm Fletcher. Storm is exactly that. Her name is Storm, but as I've said 1,000 times, she is a storm in herself. No matter how many times I say it, the woman is a powerhouse, and she's a tremendous connector of people, and we appreciate her. Tell us a little bit about your practice. Tell us how you set it up, where you're at today, and how you went about in creating one of the most influential teams in Edmonton.
I'll start from the beginning. I just want to actually just add on to Storm. She sure lives up to her name, and I'd be remiss if I didn't express my appreciation and my love for her too, because I've obviously known her for quite some time through the Richard Robbins organization, and I'm glad she connected us. I think that's the beauty of the real estate community. There's so many great people, and when you get connected from one person to another, you realize there's just it's very fulfilling. It's very fun to do things like this. So back to your question though. So I started real estate when I was young. I was about 23 years old. I started, as I mentioned, I won't get into too much of that story yet, but as somebody who really, I got into it because I felt like I was out of options. And it was because I had barely finished high school. I thought, okay, well, this is probably the only opportunity I have to potentially make enough money to not struggle, because my only goal was, like, I just didn't want to struggle. I wasn't after making a whole bunch of money. I wasn't after really anything but just not struggling, because I was sick of struggling. I was struggling my whole life. And so, you know, little by little, I stumbled upon ways to become successful in this business, and probably not in a soup. It might be more traditional than we might think, but it's that thing that we don't think about all that often, which is that I wasn't a very good marketer. I was an introvert. I was not the stereotype of a great salesperson who was outgoing, who could just knock on doors and just meet people he didn't know. It wasn't me at all. If that was the way that I had, that was the only way to success, there's no chance that I would have succeeded. Like, I would have been out of the business. And so, you know, with having very few opportunities, because that's what marketing is, right? So anytime we put out a flyer, we make a cold call or whatever, we're trying to give ourselves an opportunity for a transaction. And for me, it wasn't so much about a transaction as it was a relationship. So I sent a letter. This was like pre, tech era, which makes me feel old. I'm not very old, but like Facebook was just kind of going to be a thing. And we still used fax machines.
Yeah, man, the early 2000s.
Yeah. So I sent a letter to everybody I knew, and everybody that, like, I asked my grandma for her Rolodex. My parents' friends' addresses. And I basically just said that I'm getting into real estate. They included two business cards I remember, the only thing I remember actually writing in that letter was that my goal is not to be the biggest, but it is to be the best. And so that turned into one lead. And so I have literally one client. Well, I gave them all, like, I overcommitted to them. I gave them all of the time and attention in the world. And what I realized was that in holding myself accountable to making sure that I was actually the best person for the job, which I wasn't, because I was new, right? And so I didn't have the skill, I didn't have the knowledge, I didn't have any of those things. But knowing that they could be with somebody better, but they had entrusted me in helping them out, I took that seriously. And so the more that I worked on myself, and the more that I held myself to a higher standard, and in your 20s, you're kind of trying to grow your identity, I suppose, and figure out who you are. And so I would take these bits and pieces from agents that I looked up to, and not, I didn't look up to everything about every agent, but little things. And I would take that one thing and I would just kind of make it my own. And I realized that when you really try to actually earn your, when you take your position seriously, that somebody's entrusted you, eventually it comes back to you. And so the best form of marketing to me was other people talking about me.
Of course.
And I couldn't really figure out, like, I couldn't at the time articulate what I was doing or how I was doing it. And so then I was in this discovery of like, what's going on? So I found success early on. I thought it was a fluke the first year. So then I got into coaching and started to really untangle that knot of confusion of like, hey, what is it that's working? What's not working? Because I'm not really doing any of the traditional marketing things, but yet people just keep, you know, telling their friends and family that they should be using me. So my phone's ringing and I'm not really trying. I'm just trying to do really well with the people that I've committed to. Yeah. And I got to a point where my wife ended up getting pregnant. And so I couldn't work 90 hours a week anymore. I liked working 90 hours a week until I couldn't anymore. I was like, well, it's either your marriage is going to fail and you're going to be a crappy dad, or you put yourself out there and start getting help, right? And so obviously the first thing that I did was I hired an assistant and I helped her, you know, she's doing all the paperwork and all the things that leveraged your time a little bit, but then it got to a point where that still wasn't enough. And so somebody had used an analogy once and I thought it was great. He said, it basically took some people from the audience and he threw some fruit at them and until they couldn't, like, once he was throwing so much fruit that once they couldn't hold anymore, they'd be falling. So it's like, right. Well, that's time to get somebody else so that they can help hold the fruit. So basically when you're like, that's how you grow is you cannot handle anymore, right?
Too many balls in the air.
Yeah. And if you're really going to hold yourself to being able to deliver the same standards to your clients and still get busier, you don't really have a choice. You can either start saying no to clients and get picky. And that might be the right, you know, circumstance for some people, because I don't think that everybody should or needs to have a team. But you can't keep saying yes to everything because something's got to give, right? So I hired an agent.
Jeremy, before you go into that part of the story, how did you know at what point? Because from my experience, I knew precisely when to start growing out, because the service standard that I had set, which is world-class service, started suffering. The minute that I couldn't get back to my clients within that 4 to 8 hour window, and it got to 24 hours, I found that unacceptable because I literally couldn't get back to them without the day clocking out and it being the next day. And I knew right there and then that I needed to scale and started implementation. What was your day like when you made this? Because you were about to go into the process of putting on people. What sure. did they look like? How can somebody resonate and understand when is that time that you need to make these moves?
Well, like you, it was really at the time that I felt like my standards of excellence were being compromised. Before I actually hired somebody, I looked internally first to say, can I be better at time management? Can I be better? Can I be more efficient with the clients that I have? Is there certain times where, and especially because as a 23-year-old, I was very much buyer heavy. I would say my first couple of years was like 90% buyers. And I didn't get better as a listing agent until I hired somebody else and like burned that bridge behind me and said, I'm going to start taking listings and I'm going to be a better listing agent because I know I'm getting more referrals from buyers than I am from sellers, and there must be a reason. Anyways, going back, before I actually hired somebody, I just looked internally to see if I could be more efficient. And I think I was, and I think I actually resisted that a little bit, but I had this seed of thought that like, I know what's coming. And so when I knew what was coming, then because, you know, the challenge with agents, or people in general, entrepreneurs in general, is that when you see yourself as being really good at something, you think nobody else can be really good at it too, right? It's like, well, nobody can do it better than me. And then you become your own bottleneck, because until you can let go of that, then you're screwed. You're not going to grow.
Yeah. There's a good 80% rule. It's like, if they can do it 80% as well as you can, you got to let it go.
Yeah. So I really I started thinking about not the actual human being, like not the person with their name and their face and everything, but like the idea of what that person could be, what their character is like, how they would compliment me, how, you know, how my clients would work with them. And little by little, it's like you don't find what you're looking for unless you know what you're looking for, right? And this person just came out of nowhere. I was in a big brokerage at the time, so I was lucky that there was always like new agents coming around. And she had actually approached me, and so when you know, and that worked out really well. It was still a leap of faith. I still like really was challenged with letting my clients work with somebody else and making sure that they were there. But part of it is like going back to that challenge of thinking nobody else can do it as well as you. You have to go back to where you were and remember that there's a process to getting to a point of excellence. And to get to a point of excellence, like you have to trust that process and know that it takes time and be willing to walk through it with somebody. And then now I'm a leader and I have to be able to articulate it. And I can't, like, I was never good at articulating like what it was that was getting me referrals. Cause that was the other thing is once I send you a client, I know that my clients turn into more clients. If I send you a client and it doesn't turn into more, there's no growth, right? So I really had to get good at figuring out what it was that thing was. And what it came down to was it wasn't about, marketing. It wasn't about sales. And sure, there was some training involved, but it was really about character.
Jeremy, when you met the person at the big brokerage that took a load off your desk, mm-hmm. What did that person look like? What tasks did they take off your plate that added value and made you more scalable?
So she was working with buyers and she was very good. The quality that she had was that she was, her name is Lisa, by the way. So we're talking about somebody. So Lisa's quality was that she was just as committed to other people as I was. Like once you gave her a client, she was going to figure out how to do it. And she asked great questions. She was okay with being open to what she didn't know, which means that she would ask great questions and she knew when she wasn't able to service them in a proper way. So she would make the phone call. And that was the quality that I was looking for, was somebody who's open to learning and who isn't just kind of, their ego isn't getting in their way of just pretending that you know so that you don't look like an idiot.
Yeah.
Or you just give up because you're like, well, this is too hard for me. I knew that the other person was more important than her paycheck, and that makes a huge difference.
Of course.
Yeah. I think that's probably a really good marker of trainability is asking the good questions and clearly listening.
Yeah.
Laura, I want to take something to you, and based on what Jeremy is sharing with us this afternoon, you also, you're a serial entrepreneur yourself. You also train people in learning language. Laura is the CEO of LingoLearn, which trains adults in English as a second language and the working function of the language so these people can communicate and succeed in their new beginnings. So being a leader, in Jeremy, when you took on more people and started building a team, and that's where we're headed with this. Mm-hmm. Laura, what I want you to contribute is, as a leader, what is the best method to get your message across, to create a culture where somebody doesn't feel overshadowed by joining a team by the team lead, rather inspired and included? Because you're doing a lot of inclusion work at more than one front, not just mm-hmm. language, but also breaking other barriers such as sexism, racism, etc. But I think it all ties into one, because teams and leadership, especially in real estate and kind of the functions that we have, really do attract all people from all backgrounds to service different backgrounds.
Yeah.
Different genders, different age groups, different needs.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about how you tailor your approach. And I want to hear obviously from Jeremy as well, the same exact question, to inspire and empower rather to overshadow.
Yeah, I think empower is the word. And to empower people, you have to have them generate what it is that they want to do. So for me, much like Jeremy, much like yourself, Simeon, I'm a shit employee. I cannot be put in a box. You can't tell me when to do something, how to do it, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe you can give me the general goal, but I really need to be the one to steer myself there in a way that works for me, or my small subgroup. So I also have, you know, a bit of a controlling streak. You know, I was a bit dominating in terms of meetings or, you know, how things should be done. And I had to let it go. I had to let it go and say, you know what, why don't I take a page out of my own book and do more listening? I'm sure if I shut up, I'll learn something. And I would just have them start to generate ways to solve problems or do things and really serve as someone that was more editing or guiding, you know, just checking in. And I was able to take a lot of work off my own plate that I really didn't need to do myself by letting go of some of those reins. But also, people are going to be more committed to a cause when they are generating the way through that cause. So really just keep pushing them to come up with their own answers, right? They'll ask questions and I'll respond perhaps with another question so that they'll guide themselves into the answer.
That's amazing. Jeremy, what's your thoughts on that? How do you create empowerment and culture within your team?
Yeah, well, I mean, Laura hit the nail on the head, so I'll try not to double up on everything she said, because I totally agree with it. But I guess if I was to summarize it, I would say self-awareness, which is kind of what Laura was alluding to. You can't expect somebody to be something that you're not. It's like the classic case of the parenting of like, do as I say, not as I do. Well, it doesn't work. So the like leadership is it's more about who you are and what you do than it is about what you say, right? And so I think that I'm developing myself into somebody who can be well-spoken now, but that certainly wasn't my strength. And so my strength was to lead by example, is that to hold myself to an even higher standard that I would hold them or anybody else to. And when they see that you are getting results by being that person that you kind of like are preaching to be, then they can't help but be the same way. And so I think being vulnerable as well is like the worst thing you can do is put yourself on a pedestal. Like I am this, like however you want to say it, or however many leaders do, because their egos just can't help but like make themselves look and feel great. To be vulnerable and be open about what your own weaknesses are. And if you're going to hold them accountable to certain things, like, if you got to have a lot of confidence to let them hold you accountable to it too. Say, look, integrity is one of our huge value, core values as a team. If I'm doing something that you think is like maybe just like flirting with not being so integral, I want to hear about it. Right? And that in itself, like, ironically, is integrity, right?
Right.
Because now I'm not just saying, I'm like, I'm holding myself to the same standards.
Yeah, I'm super self-deprecating with my team. I'm very open with my character flaws. I have ADHD. I cut people off. I'm forgetful. I'm late. all of these things, right? And these things can look like a lack of integrity when it's actually me juggling 1,000,000,000 things, which they also know I'm doing. But I don't make excuses for myself either. I let them make excuses for me just because I'm really understanding as someone that is flawed of other people.
So. Yeah. And see, the cool thing is like, if you're open to that and you think that, then at least you're in a position where you know, you can work on it. Mm-hmm. When somebody literally like can watch you working on it, when one of your team members has been with you for a year or two, or maybe even just a couple of months, and they see that you had said like, I cut people off, I'm really working on that because I know that it's not good for anybody. And then they watch it and notice over time that you're like, she's actually trying not to do that. Look at that. It's amazing.
Right? Yeah.
And that right there is, again, leading by example. So I saw Jeremy say something a few minutes ago. He said the worst thing you can do is put yourself on a pedestal.
Yep.
And putting yourself on a pedestal means a few things. It's not just the easy one to see is that you've become an obnoxious or arrogant egomaniac. Obviously, there's nothing that's a bigger turnoff than that. And that's for clients, for colleagues, the minute somebody crosses that line and becomes that, I think that's kind of where the reverse effects start showing themselves and you go down in business and as a human being as a result of a big ego. The other component that destroys a business person in general about putting yourself on a pedestal, now you are starting to believe that you need to be at that pedestal. And that's far more dangerous than somebody thinking you're an asshole. Because now you have to live to your hypocritical standard. You have to live to in daily practice that pedestal that you put yourself on. And nobody can have a perfect day every day. You just can't. It doesn't exist. Because you it's get a phone authentic. Call that somebody's sick. You get a phone call that a deal went south. You get a phone call that this happened. Now what? How's the pedestal going to help you if you're all alone on that pedestal? Mm-hmm. So as a leader, you have failed, in my opinion, the minute you have separated yourself and you don't have a vulnerable side. You don't have an open door policy where your brothers and sisters can come and pick you up when you need to for that to happen. That just really resonated with me when you brought that up, and I wanted to share that.
Yeah, you got me thinking too, if I can add to that. I wrote a chapter in my book about the chapter is called self-sabotage, and I won't get into it too much.
Oh, yes, the old self-sabotage.
Yeah, I got to a point where I sabotaged myself, and this isn't part of the story, but it leads to it. So I sabotaged myself because I only believed that I was originally that I was set up for a certain level of success. And once I surpassed it, I subconsciously started doing things to bring myself back to that old thing. It was like I was just there for a short visit because that life isn't for me, right? But what had happened over time was that I built up this identity of being the guy that has it all together, that has all the answers, that's doing all the right things, that always makes the right choices. And once I there was a certain act that I did that kind of destroyed that. And I remember meeting one of my close friends at a restaurant for lunch, and I didn't even know this was coming, but he just asked me if I was doing okay because something looked off, and I just broke down. Wow. And I couldn't talk for like 5 minutes, and I just said, I'm tired of being the strong one. And what happened was I started lying to myself over the years that I was this guy that had it all together, that would never make a mistake again because I'd been there, done that, figured it all out. And then all of a sudden, when life came and showed me that it's like, hey, you don't always have it all together, it's not humanly possible, I didn't know how to handle it. It shattered my own identity of myself and the identity that everybody else had of me. And once I worked through that, and it took a long time, I decided I will never be that person again because I didn't let myself be vulnerable, and it crushed me when it had to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you just reminded me that it was.
That's lessons from the field right there, my man. And I truly appreciate you sharing such an intimate and of course, emotional moment, because it is. I can definitely tell you I've had more than one of these, unfortunately. And it is because of the amount of work we put, the amount of that we take on, and not knowing when to say no. And when you keep piling on and on, there are triggers that are going to cause that exact reaction. And you have to wonder sometimes if it does more bad than good. But what I want to do is, as a result of that, then the insight that comes out of this, and all of this will resonate to different people in different ways, but I want to streamline a message. And the message is going to be, this is a very leader-focused discussion. This is for everyone and anyone that wants to grow and grow with other people, not on the backs of other people. Mm-hmm. Leadership is something that we need to do and guide others to succeed. And in others succeeding, your success is there too. It is the only way to move up and forward with a loyal and unison culture. If everybody is winning, you are winning.
Yeah.
If you are winning on the backs of others, the clock is ticking, and it's going to be taken away from you, and it might cost you more than what you ever benefited from it. So yeah. it's definitely something I want to focus on. Jeremy, take us into your firm. How many people strong are you? How do you attract top talent? What is it like working with the Jeremy Amiot organization?
Yeah. So the first thing that I did was actually remove my name from it so that it was more all encompassing. So we're just the Sotheby's team. And it empowers people not to feel like they're living in my shadow. It's not about Jeremy Amiot. It's about us as a group and as a firm. And so that's what it was. Originally, I was at a different brokerage, and it was the Jeremy Amiot real estate team. My business partner, the full 50% partner, Ron Dixon, had his own team. It was Ron Dixon and Associates. And we wanted to get away from that because we were trying to build something with the idea of almost mimicking a commercial brokerage or an accounting firm or a law firm. We want firms, and we wanted strong agents who don't ever feel like they're limited by a certain ceiling of being on a team. And so we haven't figured out all, and we're very transparent about it. I haven't figured out all the ways to bring somebody up into, say, a partnership role yet. I'm getting there. My commitment to them is that I'm never going to give up trying to figure out how it makes sense for everybody to do that. But that's essentially what we are, is I want it's an eight players only team, which means we're going to stay small, by design, because not everybody wants to be an A player. And so Ron and I amalgamated about 3 years ago when we were at Sotheby's into Edmonton. I don't own it, just for full transparency. Sotheby's is all in Canada is all one ownership group. So it's one large brokerage. We're just the exclusive team for Edmonton, which is rare. I don't think there's any other city that has that deal.
Certainly not Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah. So because they were sort of known as more of a luxury mm-hmm. brand, that there's not a whole lot of luxury sales happening in Edmonton. So they didn't really want to grow here. It was a great opportunity for us to say they want to be well represented. They want representation in all the cities, but they knew that it didn't make sense for them to grow into a traditional brokerage style. So it was a great opportunity and a great marriage for us to work with them on that. But yeah, like over time. So right now we're five agents. We have been larger, and I've had to make some tough choices with people that I really, truly, genuinely like, but I wasn't holding myself to that standard of A players only. They weren't quite there. Doesn't mean they're bad people. And I was trying to figure out, I'm like, geez, when you hire, like, what is that thing? And I came back to values and being very, very clear on what those values are. And if those aren't necessarily somebody else's values, again, it doesn't make them a bad person. It just means I know that at some point, even if they're a good producer and things, it's not going to work. And I know that what's more important in brand and colors and names and the stories that people hear from far and wide is actually the interactions they have with one person. So every single person who represents, who every interaction that somebody has, whether it's with a friend or a cousin or a client, they're representing our brand. And so we're staying small by design. And I want to hold myself accountable to be in a position where I can give them all the attention and time that I need, because the quality that I look for in every agent as well is growth. And how do you want to grow? And it doesn't necessarily mean financial growth. We've had agents who we're actually looking to just grow as a person, to just be a better agent and actually do potentially less deals. I'm okay with that. As long as you're very honest with yourself and me about your goals, I'm going to help you try to achieve that. So,
I mean, quality assurance is a thing. I've been to the School of Hard Knocks and hiring. I've hired 40 teachers this year to retain 20. Yeah. And now I have a freaking, I feel like I have a crystal ball. You know what I mean? I'll have a conversation yeah. with someone and be like, oh, no. I see like red flags left and right. And of course, everyone's putting their best foot forward in an interview and on an interview survey, you know, and they'll jump through all the hoops. So it's like their only goal is to get the job, right? It's not to actually do the job well. Yeah. So, you know, it's important to smell desperation on people, to smell a mismatch in values or someone that isn't self-aware. I think that was something you started this podcast by saying, and it could really be the underscoring of any character, right? Like any positive character trait is underscored by self-awareness. So I feel you there. And you know, I could see why smaller would be better for a number of reasons.
Well, you know, I admire what you're doing because it's very difficult. I know without a shadow of a doubt that the bigger, and I have more empathy for large companies too, that get shit on. Am I allowed to swear?
Yeah.
Okay, so they get shit on for
miraculous. We haven't yet.
They get shit on for you know, not necessarily having all the best employees all the time. Well, I get it, because the more people you hire, the harder it is to control that, right?
And that's and where your Google review tanks.
Yeah, it does come from a leadership standpoint, but and I know that I'm not at that level. I've never had to hire 40 people in 1 year. Thank God, I've had a lot of HR stuff, and I didn't finish how many staff we have. We're about 12 because we've got a lot of support staff and stuff like that. But and so I get it. But the more you put yourself out there, you're going to make mistakes on hiring, but you just get better and better and better. Your spidey senses get stronger and stronger. And yeah, there's no way to figure that out without doing it and going through the experience.
Oh yeah. And the kicking yourself for ignoring your intuition is the worst.
Yeah. So I had a big win last week, which is I unhired somebody before they started.
Tell me.
Well, my spidey senses were telling me that it was like I wanted it to work because there was a lot of things about this person that seemed to fit and make sense. And, you know, the look and the style and the probable skills and everything that she was saying was they were saying all the right things. It's easy to say all the right things. Uh-huh. But then, like, put your money where your mouth is. And there was small, subtle signs that I would have completely ignored in the past. Like communication. So before she was going to start, she was supposed to send me a list of her, because there were some flags that the listings that she had were, you know, they were under commission, they were overpriced. And I said, okay, well, this is a perfect opportunity to set the reset button. So before you start, because we hold ourselves to a certain standard, is that this is a time to have a conversation with them about proper education. And you might not want the listing, because if it's not saleable, like, why would we take that on? You're not doing yourself a favor. You're not doing them a favor. So she's okay, great. So I said, send me an email with all your listings. I will put my eyes on it. We'll work through it together. And then I'll show you how to have that conversation. Cause she was still a little bit of a newer agent, right? Well, she just didn't send it for days and days. And I know that the agents that I have, the agents that are committed, all the ones that worked out, they would have hung up the phone and been like, wow, what an opportunity to have a top agent work through it with me. They're going to help me get all my listings sold. They're going to help. And so I can tell you the commitment level and the excellence level just wasn't there. Great person. I would still go having drinks with her, and, you know, and maybe one day later on in her journey, she might be ready for that. But I could tell just that one little tiny thing that I would have ignored in the past and brushed it off, and she can grow into that. No.
What other things might she take a week to send?
Well, and that's just it. How can you trust that they're going to communicate in a world class way with your client? Mm-hmm. So the minute you start giving them business, if they didn't have enough respect and or see the importance of getting that list to you, they are off mark, because as a junior agent or intermediate agent, to have a top agent look at your business and volunteer their time and effort into helping you is something you should have valued a lot more. So I do think her sense on that was off, and I think you made a good call.
Yep.
Back to what we were saying about the ego, right? Is like, if you really cared more about the result than like appeasing your own feelings, you would be like, you'd be all over it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
I have a question for you, Jeremy. What are you doing to attract strong agents? So above and beyond, is it when you walk and talk, is it naturally targeting organically the strong agents because they know, because they see what you do for a living? Do you go outbound and market? How do you attract top talent? How does that agent know to come to you?
Okay, great question. So I'll premise it by saying it isn't easy. and it's one of the reasons that we're small. We're in an interesting position where I'm really not after volume. So I'm unattached to the number of agents that I have. I'm completely unattached. What I'm attached to is quality and making sure that I hold myself accountable to when there is an opportunity, when I think there is a fit, that I wouldn't just let it slip by that I might actually just reach out and say, hey, I think you'd be a great fit. Why don't we have a conversation? But you said the word attract. And so that is the main thing. I do not pursue. I don't cold call. I don't reach out to virtually everybody. I'm lucky that Edmonton is a pretty small market in terms of the real estate community. I think there's 3,400 agents. And so everybody gets to know everybody pretty quickly. And so by the transactions that we have, the interactions that we have, those can turn into just conversations of, hey, like, and so when I'm in a position where I just had a transaction with somebody and it's a new agent, and if they're curious enough to ask me a question of anything to do with success in real estate, I said, well, we'll go for coffee. And I'm unattached to, like, it's not a recruitment coffee. It's like a literally where can I help you? And if I'm unattached to whether they might be a fit or not, I don't know unless I have that conversation. And at the very worst thing that can happen is that I've just helped them find some little bit of success, because part of my I suppose mission with in terms of the real estate industry is I want to raise the level of professionalism in this industry. And if I can do that just by sharing like one little small professional tidbit to somebody, that helps, right?
Well, my man, you shared a tremendous amount of insight today. And literally, if anyone in our audience has a moment, please visit brokersplaybook.com. where you are going to find a ton of interviews just like this, as well as our mission statement, which is to literally mirror what Jeremy just said, is to elevate the professional standard in both the mortgage and real estate industry in order to elevate each other and empower each other and learn from each other. This is a platform of giving back. Most of the guests on this show have a very, very full cup, both financially, in most cases, and more importantly, emotionally. They're fulfilled individuals. They're inspiring individuals. And Jeremy, you, my friend, and your story, although we know very little with what you shared, a lot of us will be able to resonate with a tough and humble beginning and having to really work hard and figure out ways to get to where you are today. So I personally, before I sign off, I want to say thank you so much to you for sharing. A huge round of applause for your efforts, your practice, and I wish you continued growth and success. Laura?
Yeah, bless your introvert heart, Jeremy. I think the real estate world needs so much more of thoughtfulness, humbleness, not trying to be the biggest all the time, but merely the best. So thank you for sharing your words, your wisdom with us. And we definitely will have many more conversations, no doubt.
Well, thank you guys. This was, I had a lot of fun having these conversations. And just as you mentioned, it's like more people, we need more people like you guys having these discussions and opening up platforms so that people can hear it and be influenced by positive messages. And I really believe that from the time that I got into this business to where it's at now, it has come a long way, and it's because of platforms like this. So thank you guys.
Cheers.
Jeremy, thanks again, my man. Everybody in the Brokers Playbook Nation, have a wonderful day, and come back 2 Wednesdays from today for your next episode of Brokers Playbook. Until then, follow, share, and of course like this message on any platform you're on. We'll see you soon.